The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. When winemaker John Casella acquired Morris of Rutherglen in 2016, his sole aim was to save an Australian icon from liquidation. But then he noticed the original hybrid copper still, not to mention the many barrels maturing Morris's renowned fortified wines, and saw a clear opportunity to make a uniquely Australian single malt whiskey. Casella Family Brands set up a dedicated company, Copper and Grain Distilling, and lured Scotch whiskey experts John McDougall and Dr. Jim Swan to advise the business. Darren Peck, formerly of Diageo, was appointed head distiller. From the start, John was determined to compete with foreign imports by creating the best possible whiskey at an accessible price tag. In June 2021, Copper and Grain released two debut whiskies under the Morris label that have been extremely well received, being awarded gold medals pre-release at the 2021 San Francisco World Spirits Competition. You'll hear two interviews within this episode. The first is with John Casella and Michael Sargent, who is Head of Strategy and Innovation at Copper and Grain. I spoke separately to head distiller Darren Peck.
All right. Well, John and Michael, thanks so much for joining me on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Obviously, some very exciting news, the long-anticipated launch of Morris Whiskey. John, maybe you could sort of take me back to when you acquired the Morris of Rutherglen business. Was this in the front of your mind when you made that acquisition?
No, look, the acquisition was made to save an Australian icon. They actually held a tasting that were going to sort of scatter the barrels and the wines all over Australia. And given the relationship with the Morris family, it goes back to my father and David's grandfather, where he actually loaned him a small amount of money to see him through the season. And given the reputation that Morris had, there's no way we were going to let that happen. So we moved in fairly quickly and made sure that the icon was saved and continued to trade. The opportunity of making whiskey, I mean, when we walked through the place and there was a lovely old still that hadn't been used for 30 or 40 years, the generous number of barrels that date back to the 1800s, and I thought, there's a really strong connection there. We do have a family brewery that could create the wash, and we do, apart from the fortified barrels, have thousands of wine barrels that we could reconfigure for whiskey. So, I mean, all the elements were there for this to happen.
And so how soon did you sort of push the button on this to get whiskey happening?
Fairly quickly. We had to find somebody to recondition the old still. And there's some really nice photos of what it looked like before and after. And copper's one of those metals that is always gorgeous, whether it's old or whether it's new. And it went from sort of being gorgeous old to very sort of shiny and new and obviously continuing what it was designed for. And it is actually an Australian-made still, Australian-designed still, and that's fairly important for us that we're Victorian-made, the whiskey's Victorian-made, but the still itself is Australian-made as well.
Are you a whiskey enthusiast yourself, John?
I've always enjoyed whiskey, enjoyed spirits as a whole, enjoyed grappas. So whiskey and grappa are my two favourites.
Now, when you were sort of looking at the Australian whiskey category generally, what was the opportunity that you saw for a brand like Morris?
Look, we felt fairly strongly, when you look at other beverages, how strongly self-sufficient Australia is. And when you look at beer, wine, we're predominantly, and beer, I think it must be over 90%, wine is probably 70 or 80% domestic. And then you look at spirits, and we've got all the ingredients, but we don't actually have serious local competition to the imports. And there's obviously a very strong space there for someone with capability to actually migrate and build on that segment, which is purely Australian-made spirits that compete with the imports.
the distillers listening to this would say, well, there's a, you know, there's a lot of us around the country. What's kind of different about the Morris whiskey proposition to most of the existing distilleries that are out there?
There's a strong alignment with making wine and making whiskey, and it seems a strange alignment, but at the end of the day, we do have the brewery, we create the wash, we do have a store of barrels. We've got well over 30,000 barrels in the wine business that we have, and all of those could be reconfigured over time, because there's only a set life that they are useful for winemaking, then they can move across to whiskey making. To that extent, we've got our own cooperage as well, which reconfigures, retoasts, and then moves them on to the whiskey production. We do have the fortified barrels, and so it's a matter of producing the wash, distilling that, and then aging it. And we've got the facility to age it, and we've got the still then that ties all of that together in one spot, and it's the Morris of Rutherglen spot.
Was it also, though, about, you know, just having the volume to be able to supply a high-quality product at a price that people can afford, you know, to drink day-to-day?
Exactly. It's the same thing with wine. The smaller producers obviously have different cost bases, so we're starting small. The ambition is to be strong and large, but not huge. And at the end of the day, we need to be able to produce the best possible product at the best possible price. And that's how you remain competitive and how you satisfy the consumer's demand, by having competitive products rather than just demanding a higher premium because you're smaller, because you're Australian.
Can you give us any sense of, you know, how much whiskey you've been putting down over the last few years?
We've had a fairly strong production program. The exact numbers I don't have, but we've tried to make sure that depending on the level of success, we don't disappoint our customers and our consumers.
Now, Michael, you've been on board for, I think we were saying, 3 or 4 years. What did you have in front of you when you started?
As John mentioned, I think when the business brought Morris site into the business, I think we didn't really know what to expect when we went down there on the site. But as John mentioned, the still was amazing to see that. In the same space that had been originally installed, and obviously this amazing library of fortified wines. But from my end, you know, developing the proposition and the branding was, for me, it was to be really respectful of the history of Morris and some of the branding and the tradition of Morris going back to 1859. So, evolving both the fortified positioning and the whiskey positioning to almost talk to each other and celebrate each other, I think. One of the things we've been really careful to do is respect that history of fortified wine, and if anything, hopefully shine a light back onto fortified wine and the craft of fortified wine, because it is, you know, amazing craft and some amazing products. And so to be able to celebrate that, but also, you know, leverage that history for the whiskey as well, because the story is quite, you know, it's weaved together in terms of the history and the barrels that we use and the site.
It was always going to be Morris whiskey. There was never any debate about whether it could have been another brand.
Of course there was debate, yes. We had some really good sessions. I kept on coming back to Morris just because the story, as John mentioned, is a fantastic story. John's family, you know, has history with the Morris family. And the history of blending and creating these fantastic flavours in the wine, it was something that we really wanted to leverage in the whiskey. I think we can make some great whiskey, but, you know, the X factor here is the ability to leverage some of those fortified wine casks. And so why wouldn't you talk about it, and why wouldn't you, you know, want to, you know, elevate the brand in the positioning?
Morris head distiller Darren Peck came to Copper and Grain with a production background that includes 9 years at spirits giant Diageo.
I did a number of jobs for Diageo, so I was a senior commercialisation brewer within the Guinness Group. But while I was over in the US, I looked at projects with Crown Royal and George Dickel. I've also distilled with some other smaller distillers outside my Diageo days. And then one of my other pieces of work was looking at enzymes for distilling as well.
When you saw the resources that you had to work with, what was your first impression that you had?
Oh, well, the place is fantastic. The still we've got down here was actually built in the 1930s, and it was built in Adelaide. It was installed in Morris in 1941, and it's an absolutely unique hybrid still. There's nothing like it. With an hybrid still, what we have is a pot with a small column on top. And we played with that column and the number of plates to get the absolutely perfect spirit to make a great whiskey. The expertise of David and the team in Morris maturing fortified wines is simply world-renowned. The amount of casks we have here that people don't have access to that sort of cask normally. We've got 100-year-old Muscat casks. We've got wine which is 80 years old maturing. It's just a fantastic opportunity and a fantastic place.
And how would that still compare to most of the stills that we see around Australia or indeed in Scotland?
In Scotland, they normally go for pot stills. So you'll get a wash still, which boils over into a collection vessel, which is then secondary boiled over in a spirit still, and they are both pot stills. A lot of the Australian stills I have seen, and I've been around a lot of the distilleries, they have gone for the hybrid type. But what you'll find is that doing one pass, where we actually still do the traditional two-pass distillation system.
Darren says it was invaluable for him to be able to access some of the leading authorities on Scotch whisky as he worked towards developing the Morris style.
So, extremely lucky to work with two of the world's renowned whisky experts. I met John McDougall, one of the experts up in Scotland, about 5 years ago. So the resources that I had to make the perfect premium whisky was amazing. And I went over to Scotland, visited a number of distilleries to see the different methods and the different spirits coming off their stills. And I met John McDougall, who is a world-renowned expert. He's worked in near enough every region of Scotland. He's really taken me under his wing and brought me through the journey of how to make the cuts, make sure the spirit's right, look at the barrels, how you judge the barrels. And then the other expert, unfortunately passed away, was Jim Swan, who was an absolute genius when it came to barrels. And he helped us develop a barrel system that meant that we could really mature our spirit to give the best depth of flavour and character.
Talk us through the aspects of the production that make this whisky unique, uniquely Morris.
So we'll start with the malt, which is a blend of Gardner and Westminster, which is all Australian, malted in Australia. It then goes up to the family-owned brewery in Griffith, where it's made into a wort, which is then fermented in the family winery to wash. And that wash is then from that family winery's posting to our wash still, where we take it from about 8% to 24%. And that's an original still as well, which was built many years ago. From there, we then put it into our second still, which is our hybrid pot still, the 1933, absolutely beautifully restored still. We have also got the unique ability to use Morris barrels and mature with world-beating fortified wine barrels. It's a unique proposition. We've got all the elements coming together to produce an absolutely unique premium whiskey.
The finishing happens in those fortified wine barrels, if I'm not mistaken. Is the early part of the maturation, is that happening in ex-table wine barrels?
Some of that happens in ex-wine barrels. However, they've all been through a proprietary process which Jim Swan developed with us to make them absolutely perfect for whiskey. So they're actually rejuvenated into almost into fresh whiskey barrels rather than being ex-wine barrels.
When you say fresh whiskey barrels, they're not going to be like new oak, though,
no.
Obviously. What sort of characteristics would they have?
So they would be more like once you've had a bourbon barrel being used, so you've got the toasted, and I can't go into exactly what we do,
yeah.
But it gives you a more bourbon-esque barrel.
Yeah, a gentler touch on the spirit rather than something that's going to really impart a lot of flavour into the spirit.
Yes, and if you imagine, if you look at the Scotch whisky industry, their sherry finishers and their port finishers normally setting off in a used bourbon barrel, which means that a lot of the material has been extracted from the wood before the whisky hits it, and we're aiming for the same thing. You don't want to over-extract from the wood And you don't want too fresh wood because you get that very vanilla coming out of wood, but you don't want it to be absolutely bland either. So it's finding that balance to give you a good maturation.
Now, maybe, Michael, you could just tell us about the two products that you're launching with, which actually they've already picked up some gold medals, haven't they, overseas before even launching?
Yeah, look, so what we decided to do is we really want to position the Morris Signature variant as the gateway to Australian single malt whiskey. So it is priced at sub $100, and we do recognise that, you know, obviously a lot of Australian single malts out there, a lot of them are obviously at the higher end of the market and therefore not accessible for a lot of people who really want to get in and try some of these whiskies. So it was really important for us to position ourselves sub $100. And we wanted to make sure that the actual the pack and you know, how it looks is still very premium and well, I'd say is traditional. Like, there is some very traditional cues about it. So I think from a positioning and packaging point of view, we've really, really tried to keep that premiumness about it. And then from a liquid point of view, we finished the liquid. It's a very refined spirit. It's a lighter, you know, single malt whiskey. It's not overpowering. So we're really conscious that we wanted to find the right balance to make sure that the whiskey shone through and we have this, you know, beautiful, complex and sweet spice flavour of the fortified coming through. So that was the idea behind the signature. And then with the musket, it's been a similar whiskey, but it's been aged a little bit longer and also finished off for a longer amount of time in some different, more premium musket casks, some older musket casks. So you will notice, you know, a lot more flavour coming through from the fortified for that product as well. So higher ABV again, still quite affordable and in that entry range for Australian single malt whiskey.
Are we going to see limited edition innovative products coming out over the journey as well?
Yeah, that's the plan. I guess one of the things that we have access to, and it's quite exciting personally for me, is that we can explore some of these older casks and liquids that are down there at Morris. So talking to David Morris, the head winemaker down there, he's got a few hidden gems tucked away that we can potentially tap into. But there's interesting liquids, you know, from Port and Tawny. We have the sherry cask, Opera, Topake or Tokay. So there's some interesting, you know, liquids and barrels down there that we can play with. We're also looking at different grains and potentially some peated finishes and also single barrel expression. So there's a lot of ideas, and we are you know, tinkering away in the background on a few of them. But for now, it's really just bedding down these products in market and really getting establishing a really you know, a base for the brand and to be renowned as a, you know, a serious and quality you know, provider of whiskey.
And what's been the reaction of the Morris family to the venture?
Very positive at this stage. We've got David involved. We've got his son, who's a winemaker, involved as well. And it's just an extension of what they did. And the important thing is that we've obviously respected the brand, respected the family in maintaining what would have been lost. And it's a natural extension, almost a natural extension, because we're using the still, we're using the site, we're using the name, we're using the traditional barrels that the family once owned and basically repurposing those. But those barrels aren't lost, they're reused again. So it's just getting more out of what was there.
Is it going to be purely whiskey? I was wondering whether potentially there might be a brandy at some stage.
That has crossed our mind, and we will be producing a premium brandy in time. So there's something that we've put away already and something we will be producing, because traditionally that was a brandy still.
Yeah, I mean, obviously whiskey is what people want to be drinking at the moment, but brandy's got such an incredible history in this country, and I sort of wonder whether it might have its time in the sun at some stage in the future again.
I think we'll play a part in that. We're certainly intending to sort of bed down what we're doing with whiskey and not sort of be too distracted. But I think there's a huge future in premium brandy. And I think the market got disrupted by very cheap brandies that were taxed and overtaxed, and ultimately the market was destroyed for brandy. But when you look at the cognacs and Armagnacs in Europe, they're essentially brandies made in a particular way. So there's a lot of learnings there from both what we do with whiskey and the flavour characteristics that go with what the spirit that comes from grape.
What do you think it kind of says about the beverage market at the moment that, you know, Casella's kind of expanding into whiskey? You actually saw an announcement this week that Darenberg's bought a gin distillery. So there's a lot of blurring of the edges that might have people stayed in their own lane very much up until recently, didn't they?
Yeah. When you look at gin, I mean, that's quick turnover. We haven't even looked at a gin at this stage, only because we just want to be serious about what we're doing. And again, I say not too many distractions. But as I said, there's a fair bit of alignment between winemaking and whiskey making, and that's the barrels and so on. So we may see more of that, but I think the one element for us was that we actually had a brewery as well, and that gave us the wash, and all of that was done in-house. And the key, I think, to a good product is that you do everything in-house and have full control over that.
The question around, you know, a wine business working in spirits is a really interesting one, and from day one we were really conscious about that, and we set up this entity called Copper and Grain. And Copper and Grain for us was a dedicated team that focused on spirits. We brought in people who had spirits background. So it was quite a separate part to the business than the wine part. Obviously, you know, there's synergies between the two different parts of the business, but, you know, Copper and Grain acts independently of Casella, the Casella wine business, which allows us to focus and enables us to really, you know, build these products and in a way that is quite separate from the wine business.
And could there be other brands other than Morris under that umbrella?
Potentially. Look, we're working through the strategy. I think Morris, our passion is single malt whiskey, Australian single malt whiskey, and Morris is the vehicle for that. I doubt there will be other brands for single malt whiskey. But look, we're looking at it, and like we said, the Australian category for spirits is really interesting at the moment. So we won't rule anything out, but you know, we're pretty busy. I've got my hands full on Morris at the moment. So yeah, for the foreseeable future, it will be Morris.
You had some pretty impressive statistics on the growth of Australian whiskey.
Yep.
in Australia at the moment, which, you know, far outstripping other categories of yeah. whiskey, which must be, seeing that must give you a lot of confidence about what you're doing.
Yeah, look, I think as we mentioned, I think, you know, spirits in Australia, and in particularly local spirits, we've seen a boom, you know, led by gin originally. I think obviously that's driven by a lot of the new distilleries with gin. We feel that the longer game is in whiskey, and it's great to see that, you know, Australian whiskey enthusiasts are, you know, willing to invest and purchase the Australian category. But we feel that the opportunity there is to provide something that's a little bit more accessible and you know, share some of the Australian products with more of a bigger market. So I think a lot of growth left in that category, and you know, particularly at the premium end is really interesting for us as well.
I guess the only thing we haven't talked about is, you know, is export going to be a big part of this as well?
We're confident over time it will be.
Yeah.
It will be. Markets like China, where obviously there's trade issues with wine, but not involving whiskey at all.
Yeah.
Not at these early days. We've probably got other things worry about. And even back to the UK, where there's a lot of interest in different styles and different sort of producers. So the extra sales aren't about people drinking more. They're drinking much more diversely as well. So, and that's the key. And the other important thing to note is that Copper and Grain is well-resourced. So there's been no pressure to go to market, no pressure to do things. It's about doing it right and building the reputation of the brand and the products that we create, and not just about creating another business that needs to add to the bottom line.
And where can people find it? I mean, you mentioned sort of fairly broadly yep. where distribution's going to be, but for people who are going to be listening to this in the next few weeks,
yep.
where's going to be the best chance of getting their hands on some Morris?
Yes, dare say it can be found on Dan Murphy's online within the next couple of weeks, so heading from July into Father's Day, so I think that's probably the best bet. We'll be selling it direct to consumer as well on our own website, morriswhiskey.com. But every chance that it'll be in vintage cellars and a few other independent whiskey shops pretty soon as well.
Sure. Well, I think that's kind of probably covered everything. So thanks very much for having a chat with us, and best of luck with Morris Whiskey.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.